No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey and the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today we don't have a special guest. It's just going to be me and Kathleen, so we're going to wing it. We have been lucky in the last couple weeks and have had some really interesting guests. Last week, we had Mike Miller from Ferguson, Missouri, to talk about the unrest there. So if that was an interesting show and we had some people call in, so if there's a question and you didn't get to ask it last week, please feel free to call in. Let us hear from you about anything you want to talk about in the last few weeks that we've talked about. Border security, D.C. statehood, Ferguson, the situation in the Middle East, whatever. You call and we'll listen. Before we start, let me introduce my co-host, who my wife Patty says is the best thing that ever happened to me. This, of course, is because she always takes Patty's side on everything. I used to call her Patty's parrot because she'd walk around going, "Patty's right, Patty's right." Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for getting things started. How are things in Arizona?
Oh, man, they're hot. 108 degrees.
108?
Yeah. We came off of a beautiful monsoon season, which, you know, the rains. And if you've ever seen anything in the world as beautiful as monsoons in the Arizona summer, there's this great Facebook page. It's called Cochise County Wonders. It's the most beautiful, photos of the monsoons, the rains, and these clouds that come in, and the sunsets. It's just gorgeous, but it's 108. So it's a little bit hot. Little bit hot.
I know. And the crazy people of Arizona, when you're out there, if you've never been to Arizona, they always say it's a dry heat. Like that's okay. It's still 108.
Yeah, but if you go under the shade, it's like 92. It's a big difference. Oh. And you don't sweat like you do back east, you know, like in New York. You have that humidity. You, no matter where you go, you're always sweating. Here, you got to drink water because it kind of sucks the moisture out of you, but you never feel that humidity, which is really kind of much nicer than being in like 92-degree weather and 90% humidity.
Yeah.
That's tough. Jump in water and you'll be cool.
Yeah. And we're known for that in Washington. We have bad humidity. We've had a great summer, haven't had much of it. The only place I've ever been in my entire life that was more humid than Washington, D.C. is New Orleans, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably for the same reason. We're both kind of below sea level. And God really meant for Washington to be swampland, I think. And so we have a lot of humidity here. And I certainly understand that it's nicer in Arizona. Well, let me start out. First thing I want to say before I get started is my dear, dear cousin Jeffrey is in the ICU. He was in the ICU as of yesterday, intensive care unit of a hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. He's a diabetic like I am. They got his medications mixed up and his kidneys started to fail. So they took him in. At first, they thought he was in cardiac arrest. But the latest news on Jeffrey is he's getting much better. So I want to give him a shout out and say, you know, I love you, bud. I hope that You get better soon, and we'll keep an eye on you and keep you in our prayers. And that being said, let's move on to what's going on in D.C. It's hot. It's summertime. It's an election year. But Congress is still on recess, and so is the Dizzy Council, I was going to say. You know, that's a Freudian slip. The City Council. But there have been some interesting developments on statehood lately. You know, as we've said before, President Obama was asked the question how he felt about D.C. statehood, and he said, I'm for it. And in the last 10 days before the recess, we got 24 co-sponsors on our statehood bill in the House of Representatives, all Democrats. And that brings the number up now, I think, to 109. There's 106. There's 91 in the House and 15 in the Senate. So we're pushing hard. And actually, Kathleen's going to be here in Washington, and a bunch of us are going to go up on Capitol Hill in the middle of next month, and we're going to lobby in the Senate for a hearing, which we need to have on the bill. But the bad news is that I met this week with the chairman of the City Council. There's a funding bill in front of the City Council that would fund our delegation, and he won't move it, and he's just not going for it. And that's sad because we need some money. The Puerto Ricans spend $20 million on trying to become a state, and the District of Columbia spends a couple $100,000 a year. It's really kind of pathetic. But they won't move the legislation.
Let's state it for what it is. These guys, and I would bet to say, and I'm going to say this because I know you're involved, you have to – I don't even know if you have a relationship with these guys, because it's obvious to me they do not want statehood. If they have statehood, they would lose their power. They would lose their level of influence because D.C. would have two senators and a representative. And what better, you know, influence can you have or people representing you than having two senators and a representative? The City Council will become – they will still have a role, but they won't be that sense of power. And what's amazing to me when I go back to D.C. and I talk to my friends who, you know, from the past time I worked there, they are not at all involved in statehood. They don't think about it. They live in D.C. But it is something like, you know, when you mention it to them, they look at me like, you know, like, what are you talking, like, a state, like, what, when did this happen? You know, completely confused about it. And I believe it's because the City Council is hell-bent on never making statehood a reality, because they will lose their power. And anybody who's listening to us and anybody in D.C. who feels that statehood is a must, you cannot believe, I would even say, most of the guys running for the City Council, they do not want it. So you need to start having statehood as a prominent issue when you have City Council running for these seats. They need to make to say right up in the front as one of the top issues besides housing, besides education, is statehood. Otherwise, you're never going to get it. These guys don't want it. That's all.
Yeah, I think that's true. And they worry about us. They don't want to empower any new politicians. And yeah, it is a real shame. It doesn't, I often say that statehood doesn't do anything for them. It only does something for the people of the District of Columbia. It will give us $2 billion, $2 billion. I mean, it's crazy that we leave that in Maryland and Virginia every year because these guys won't fight for it. But it's true. They don't care. And you know, the sad thing about the City Council in, the district is that there's a lack of leadership on the council, you know, and this is an issue which cries out for leadership. And we're trying to lead. The congressional delegation is trying to lead on the issue. But unfortunately, with no money and no backup, we really can't do it. So
you guys are volunteers.
We are volunteers. I'm a volunteer United States Senator. Now, how crazy, you know, just think of that. How crazy is that? You know, if somebody came to you, Kathleen, and said, you've got to change the way America has done business for the past 212 years, or you have to change the Constitution of the United States, which has really only been done 17 times since the Bill of Rights, would you say, oh, let's get a couple of volunteers working on that? It's just crazy. Who would
do that? Let me explain this to the audience. This means that you don't get a salary. You don't get any kind of the cost in going up there and whatever. You don't get paid for your time. You don't have a staff. You have volunteers who help you when you need it, like me and Rachel, a few other people. But you don't have any money to try to push the statehood thing, which is something that most, I think, of the citizens of D.C. want. And I'm always amazed by the ones who don't want it. And I bet you 9 out of 10 times, those are people who are working here in the government. They're just here for their job. They either have their real house back in whatever state they're coming from, and they plan to go back there. And it would just complicate things for them, you know, because this way they can live in D.C. and they can vote for their home politics, for their Alabama senator or their Arizona senator and representative. Yeah. And that means a lot to people. They don't want to give up the right to vote for the representatives.
Well, they even brag about it. Some of them brag about it. Ralph Nader has bragged about the fact that he votes in Connecticut, and he's lived in D.C. I mean, my God, I've lived in D.C. for 35 years, and Ralph has probably lived here longer. But, you know, he brags about the fact that he still votes in Connecticut every year. So you're right about that. And it's just crazy. It's got to happen. We're the only country in the world that does this, and it's got to change. And it's never going to change if we don't put some muscle behind it. So, and just so you know, members of the city council, there are 6 of them that support this bill. And there's only one. All we need is one more person to support it. And there are a couple of people on the sidelines that we think would support it. So it's not the whole city council. It's some of the city council. We have a 13-member city council. But Phil Mendelson, who's the chairman of the city council, as long as he doesn't move it, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. His position as chairman is like the Speaker of the House. So if he doesn't move the legislation, it's never going to happen. So even the people that want it aren't going to get it, aren't going to be able to make it happen because Phil won't move it. And this year, they're going to give us a couple of $100,000 to split 3 ways to work on this. And you know what? That'll make my life easier. Because I'll get to, you know, pick up a couple of my own expenses and everything. But it's not going to make a difference. And that's the argument I made. It's not going to make a difference. They're not giving us enough money to make a difference.
So what, are they going to give you just a couple of thousand here and there? Is that what it is? Or a little bit more than that?
We haven't seen the whole appropriation, but it's approximately $200,000, and it's going to be split 3 ways because there are 3 of us. There's a 2 shadow senators and a shadow representative. And we're going to have to split it 3 ways. And I think some of it's going to go to grants. And we have gotten a little money over the years from the taxpayers. They get to check off on their tax forms and give it to us. But you know what? They even have withheld that from us lately. They won't give us that. And I talked to a taxpayer yesterday who said, what do you mean they don't give it to you? I gave you money last year. And I said, yeah, but they won't forward it to us because once it falls below a certain threshold, they don't distribute it anymore. So we're not even getting that money anymore. So basically, we're going to get a few thousand dollars more than we've gotten in the past, but it's just not enough to make it any difference.
Well, it's not enough to hire staff. Right.
You know, it's not enough to put on a PR campaign. Right. You know, this radio show that you and I do, and we talk about statehood all the time, and we have people on it all the time that deal with statehood. It's one of the primary issues, one of the primary reasons we started the show. This is really the only vehicle out there that's reaching out to the world and telling you, most people don't even know that the District of Columbia doesn't have the same rights as everybody else. Because why would you think that the place where democracy resides in the nation's capital doesn't have the same rights as everybody else? It's amazing. Almost 80% of America doesn't know that we don't have representation in the national legislature, that we don't have voting congressmen and senators, and that we don't have autonomy over our budget or our legal system. They don't understand this. And if it weren't for you and me, the word would not be getting out very far.
And it's sad because, there could be so much more that could be going on to make statehood a reality. And I firmly believe that, you're right at the cusp of making that movement. But without the support of Phil Mendelson and more members of the city council, they don't want to lose their power. They don't want to lose their power. Yeah. And it's just the saddest thing to me. And this is what drives me crazy, because people say, well, look at these politicians, how they are. And I see it. I see it in this Phil Mendelson. So what do you do? Is he an at-large city councilman?
No. He's the chairman of the city council. So he functions like the Speaker of the House. So, in some sense, he is an at-large person because he represents the whole city.
But he represents what?
He actually controls the city council.
But he represents what people elect him. Dave, is it Ward 3?
Citywide.
Citywide. No. Okay, it's a citywide thing.
And
all
before he was council chairman, he was an at-large councilman. So he's always been elected citywide. He's never been a ward councilman. But, like you say, he's got to move the bill, and he's just not going to do it. But we're going to stay on him.
And you know what? And it's even better that he represents the whole city, because then anybody in the city who wants statehood should be phoning his office. And I wish we had that number. Maybe we can come back after the break and give people the number to call Phil Mendelson and tell the office. Actually, make sure you try to talk to him. You want statehood. You want them to fund the bill so that statehood can be a reality.
Well, given that, I also want to talk about what's going on. And it's funny because you're making this point that this is politics everywhere, and we complain about it all the time. And it's true. In China this week, the Chinese legislature said that it was not going to allow open nominations for the first election in Hong Kong. These were the guys that were going to, embrace democracy. And when they took control of Hong Kong, they reunited Hong Kong. They were going to have open democratic elections. But they're saying that this would create a chaotic society. That's what these guys say to me, too, it causes confusion and they work on it. They don't need us to work on it. Well, this is exactly what our old friends, the communist Chinese, who have now become the democratic communist Chinese, are saying. They're not going to allow open elections in Hong Kong, that there's going to be a standing committee that has to approve all the candidates that are going to run.
Oh my God.
Yeah, do you love it? And so there's people that are vowing to have demonstrations in Beijing. But we know how that goes, right? We all remember Tiananmen Square. These guys are not big on allowing free thought or free speech. So it is politics everywhere, that the people in power, spend a lot of time keeping themselves in power. And that's part of our problem. Leadership is about bringing other people up through the ranks and inspiring other people trying
passing
to help.
Passing it off. Yes.
And last week, I'm in the middle of a campaign, and I don't want to talk about it too much because it's not what this show's about. But I took time out to go to a thing called DC Women in Politics, because there were all these young women who have come to a seminar to learn about politics. And I'm very busy right now, but I took it took off time to go there and spend the morning as part of this because they invited me, because I believe this is my responsibility as an elected official. I've been training political people for years, young people, and I believe that we all have a responsibility to encourage and enlighten and help develop the next generation of political leaders. And so these kind of conferences, like the one I went to, and this week I went to the American Political Science Association, these kind of conferences, we really don't talk about the specifics, like how you get petition signatures, or put together a committee, or how you do fundraising, things like that. We go and we talk about why your involvement is so important. And, you know, you talk about that all the time, about being involved in – you've been involved in politics as long as I have. And
at every level, unfortunately.
And every level, right. And how important it is. How important it is. And one thing I'd like to talk about, just so people understand, this is a subject that you've brought up many, many times, and that's Title IX, right. Title IX sports. Well, let me tell you something. If you're out there listening, you need to get on the internet and go look up Sam Gordon. Sam Gordon, I assume her name is Samantha, is an 11-year-old girl that is just amazing. She plays football on a boys' team. She plays on both sides of the ball, which a lot of little leaguers do. You know, she plays offense and defense. She's one of the most amazing running backs I've ever seen. And I don't mean for a little kid. I mean at all. You know, she runs like Gale Sayers. She has the fluidity of a running back like that. And she's got all the moves. And the little boys are just confounded by her. She's constantly running, you know, taking the ball and running 30 or 40 yards. And she's amazing. And we all remember in the last few weeks, this girl, Moni Davis, who was the 13-year-old that played in the Little League World Series, pitched a no-hitter, and is the first girl, young girl, to be on the first Little Leaguer, I think, to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And this is not a coincidence. When I was a kid, no little girls played baseball or football. They may have played softball, but none of them played football.
They mostly were cheerleaders, if they were anything.
They were mostly cheerleaders, right. And look at what – and this is a result of Title IX. So if you don't think in some part – I mean, of course, these kids are phenomenally gifted and they're great athletes. Moni, the thing that I like about her most is she doesn't even want to play baseball. When she grows up, she wants to be a basketball player, and she wants to go play for the University of Tennessee, which – As if you follow women's basketball, you know they're always one of the top women's teams in the country. Their coach is a phenomenon. But
so the point is, though, that without Title IX, there wouldn't be at University of Tennessee's scholarship fund, right, to have her play basketball,
right,
and it wouldn't be all right. I mean, they wouldn't have these programs in high school to feed into the colleges and universities that have Title IX programs so that women can be athletes. So if you know, all this talk about anti-government and how bad it is, there are so many things that have worked right, and that's what we have to make sure we keep, because that has given a level course for women to be able to be something other than a cheerleader, quite frankly.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, as the father of two daughters, now both of my daughters, my oldest daughter got all her athletic talent from me. So unfortunately, she's not very good. My youngest daughter was pretty good little athlete, but she really wasn't interested in sports, and they're both dancers.
Right.
And I thank God for that, because this is something that they were passionate about. My oldest daughter teaches dance while she's in college. It's a thing she does on the side. She's a member of a professional dance group. My younger daughter is following in her footsteps, and they have a passion for it. But I think sports are so important not only because they keep kids occupied and they teach them a lot of lessons, but they teach women, especially women, young women, things that they really need to learn that men have known for years, like teamwork and you know, how to succeed. And they give them great confidence. You know, yes. How many women do we know in the world that lack self-esteem? And one of the best ways to build self-esteem is to play sports. You know, you score a touchdown, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel important. Teamwork. How many women work against each other? Right? They're always competing with each other when they're teenagers for boyfriends and other things. You know, when they get older, maybe there's this sisterhood bond that develops between them. But it will bond. They'll bond faster and stronger if they bond through sports, I believe, anyway.
Well, you know, we're going to be getting ready for a break. But when we come back, I do want to talk about an interesting thing that came up on border security. And, you know, we talked about 2 weeks ago with rancher Don Kimball.
Yeah.
And he brought up some things that I just like to talk a little bit about when we come back from break. And this song that you chose is really, I remember this, and I listened to it, and I was like, aha, it just like touched me in the heart, because it is a very sad kind of song for some of the stuff that's just going on, and the apathy and the craziness and the shootings and, you know, all this strife that is going on. It's a good song, Michael. You chose a good one for once.
All right. Well, and it's not echoing the Bunny Man. It's Darkness, Darkness by the Youngbloods, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks for listening.
Be my pillow, take my hand, and let me sleep.
And that song goes out to a number of people. First, and we're going to talk about this little girl in a few minutes from New Jersey, who in Arizona this week shot the instructor, the gun instructor. But it goes out to her, because I know she must be suffering, and also Michael Brown's family in Ferguson, to my dear friends Sue and Walt, who lost their only son to violence, and to all those who are suffering, because there's too much violence to handle these days. I just don't get it, Kathleen. I don't get it.
Well, you know, there's just so many things that are knocking at our door, and I don't want to sound like gloom and doom, but I think if there's one thing that this show is trying to do, it's trying to make Americans realize that the day that you don't have to get involved in politics, where you can just, you know, go to your nice home and turn on your TV and have your wine or have your beer, is going. Because if you want to enjoy the kind of lifestyle you may have today, or you want it to get better, it's going to be gone before you know it if you don't get involved. And I'll use a couple of examples. In my hometown of Douglas, Arizona, you know, one thing politicians bank on is that people don't get involved. You know, they bank on the fact that they're not going to go to the meetings, that they're not going to go to their town hall meetings and vote certain, because that's the way they can keep the power and do whatever they want. In this small town of Douglas, the city council, and it's a depressed town, it's got no real industry except being on the border for drugs and, you know, the coyotes who bring over the illegal immigrants. That's really the industry for this town. And yeah, it's dying a slow death. And the city council, with not too many people in the lobby watching them, raised property taxes. And they made a comment that they said, you know, well, we're going to devalue all the homes in Douglas anyway. So with a devaluation of your home, you're really not going to feel this property increase. It's going to kind of be the same thing. And, you know, there was no one to stand up and say, are you out of your minds? First of all, city council cannot devalue property. That's done by the county. And why would you do that? And why would you raise property taxes? It already has the most I think it's one of the top two or three highest sales tax in the state of Arizona. So if you don't go to these meetings, your city council meetings, this is what happens to you. Now, you look at a big city like D.C., and half of your city councilmen are going to jail. Now, that's an exaggeration, but quite a few. You had a whole change of power based on the fact that so many were involved in corruption or touched it so close that, you know, while you couldn't maybe prove it, you know it was there for them. You know that they were corrupted. So Americans have got to get off their seat. They've got to get involved because it's from everything. I'm sitting here in Arizona. Every politician, I'm going to protect the border. I know what to do. You know, meanwhile, you know, we talked a little bit with Rancher Don Kimball about the fact that it's not only the number that's coming over from Latin America, but it's the ones that are coming from Russia, China, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, I mean, you name it, and they find it crossing the border from the Quran to flyers, Al-Qaeda flyers. Well, in about a couple months ago, there was a fight for power in the Al Prieta area because one of the guys who had power for a long time died. So there was a, you know, fight over competing for this territory. And there was a lot of rumors about the fact that there were Russians found, you know, among the dead. Now, on the internet, I started to see that this whole rumor started. I don't know if it's a rumor. I don't think it is. But the fact that the Russians are in Mexico heading to come through our borders, which are so wide open. And, you know, the thing that some people were saying, which is very true, why the Colombians have always been very vicious and have weapons. They're not funded by a government. They are themselves. Right. So sometimes they have a hard time getting the weapons they need. Russia is funding these guys who are coming through Mexico to come up here, and they have anything that they want. So, you know, if you don't get, like, scared to death the fact the rape tree that he mentioned, you know, where all the women get raped when they come, the coyotes bring them over, then you should be fearful of the fact that the Russians are coming through our southern borders. And you know me, I'm not a conspiracy theory, but it makes such common sense. How best to destabilize the United States but through this open border and sending their people through here? It just, and you know, it's funny because when you see these sayings on the internet in many different areas, there's always truth to it. And it doesn't seem so far-fetched, especially when they've found Russians coming over here already and they find them in the battles with the cartels in Mexico. Well, so that was one thing.
Well, and I think, you know, you're right. You have to pay attention. And that's been the problem in the District of Columbia. You know, we had the chairman of the city council resign because nobody was paying attention to what he was doing. We've had two councilmen go to jail. Yesterday, we had another candidate for public office that took $140,000 illegally and lied about it, gets sentenced. Next week, we have another guy that ran for public office in the same year, 2010, a guy named Kelvin Robinson, who's going to get sentenced. The mayor has been under investigation almost since the day he was elected for 4 years. The reason we're going to get a new mayor is because this guy, Jeffrey Thompson, who gave money to everybody, came out and said that he conspired with the mayor. So, you know, we've got constant federal investigations going on. We have another councilman who got defeated in the primary because of a shady land deal that he was involved in exchange for some metro property. And we've got maybe three of the mayor's top advisors, all who pled guilty to stuff. So yeah, corruption is rampant in the District of Columbia government. There's not anybody running for any political office today in the District of Columbia. There are 15 at-large candidates. There are another half a dozen ward candidates, and there are six candidates for mayor, and every one of them has honesty on their platform because it's such a big issue in the District of Columbia. And you know, I keep on thinking about something that is inscribed above the archives building in Washington, which says the price of freedom is ever vigilance. And that's what we have to do. We have to be ever vigilant. We have to keep an eye on these guys.
Yes.
You know,
and vote them out and get involved and find out who the candidates are and what their issues are and do a you can Google anybody now and find out so much about them. So Google these guys and then go to some meetings and have your friends, invite your friends over, because it impacts everything you do, from the car you drive to where your clothes come from to what your food is going to look like to whether or not you'll ever be able to own a house, whether, you know, the apartment building that you're living in is actually going to be owned by the Chinese. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Politics impacts your everything that you do. So people have got to wise up. I've never seen really, you know, it's just so much apathy and they all throw up their hands. Oh, what can I do? What can you do? Turn off the TV, turn off your phone, turn off Twitter, Facebook, stop playing games on Facebook, and go to a meeting. Believe me, make those politicians squirm. They'll squirm if they see all of a sudden they're looking at the seats were always empty. Now they're going to look in a full. They are going to freak out. At least do that. At least get some pleasure out of that if you don't like politicians. Show up at a meeting.
Right. Well, and democracy is not for sissies. It's a tough system. And, you know, another great person from Arizona besides Kathleen, Aristotle, also said the same thing. He said everything is politics, you know, and he was the great. He and Plato were the two great original political philosophers. And he said everything is politics. Anything that involves two people is politics. And you understand that, right? You understand that as a parent, Kathleen, that the first day that baby comes out, you know, he or she starts manipulating you. Anything that involves two people, more than two people, involves politics, and if you don't keep an eye on what's going on, there's that old saying, pity not the ones who serve, they only get what they deserve.
That's right.
And that's the problem. We have to be leaders. You know that one of my favorite issues is term limits. You know, right. I've never understood the concept of term limits. The people of Virginia, for example, have a one-term limit on their governor, one-term limit. And how crazy is that? 4 years, and then they have to have another governor. So, where else do we fire people for their experience? Every congressman has a two-year term limit. Every governor has a four-year term limit. Every senator has a six-year term limit. If you don't like them, vote them out.
Right.
But we don't do that. We don't pay enough attention.
And I would state one more thing, is that what I found in both parties is a corruption at the point of it doesn't matter what we need to do as long as we can get the votes. So there's voter fraud. There's, you know, eight people voting out of one house, all with different names. And you know, my big thing in Arizona and especially in Cochise County, one of the most corrupt Democratic-run areas that I know of is that the means justify, you know, the ends justify the means. In other words, what's most important is just to get the vote. It doesn't matter how you do it. It doesn't matter if you do voter fraud or if you, you know, dead people vote or whatever. And when you bring attention to the Democratic leaders, they don't really want to deal with it because, maybe it's that county that's huge. It's 250,000 square miles or something, but it's all the way in the corner of the state on the Mexican border. Who cares? Well, this is what the problem is. We got to start electing people who care, whether it's a small rural town or whether it's a big place like Phoenix. And you know, that's my other rant about Arizona. We are, of all the states recovering from the recession, I think the worst state is Nevada, and then we're next. We're number two. We are 50 as far as what we spend on education for our children in the state of Arizona. This state has claimed it's a real true conservative state. Let me tell you, there are no jobs being made. Maybe in Phoenix, but in the rest of the state of Arizona, there's a lot of jobs you can have if you're talking about really lower wages, because it's a right-to-work state, of course, and you can't form unions. It's really an impoverished state, and I just shake my head because I'm not happy sometimes with the Democrats, but living in a state controlled by Republicans scares me more. It does. There is no growth here. There is no optimism. It just seems to be a very negative feeling. And then, you know, with this state being, hey, take your guns. Everyone get out guns. And, you know, I believe that you can have it and you should. But what happened to this girl who I guess was visiting from New Jersey? They went to this range where I didn't realize this, but it was right next to a community airport. And it was the where they were shooting, and I guess they were also shooting rockets or some kind of stuff. Also, in before this incident, there had been a lot of complaints registered against them. It is right on the path of airplanes, you know, small airplanes landing in this right next to this range. And unfortunately, that this 9-year-old, you know, the instructor made a huge mistake. And that kind of, when I saw that, I was really suspect. I think they've shut them down for good reason, because you never stand on the side of anyone shooting, even a pistol or a gun. You always stand behind them, because even I know, you know, when you're shooting a shotgun, it has a kick. So why he was not standing behind her, holding her arms with her, why they should want to shoot a submachine gun, I don't know. But to not understand that that would have a kick, and she was not a very strong-looking girl. I mean, she was a 9-year-old girl. She didn't look like she could even hold the gun. And to have sit there, and as you could see, the gun starts to kick to the left, right where the instructor is, and then they shut it off. I can't imagine the terror she'll have for the rest of her life.
Well, and that's, yeah. And you know what? That's the thing. What you just said is really the thing that perplexes me. Not about the technical aspects of the where the guy was standing or whatever. Is why would you have a 9-year-old child, especially a 9-year-old girl, use an Uzi? I mean, I don't understand what they were trying to accomplish with this. You know, I can't imagine my wife letting me take one of my 9-year-old daughters that, you know, when they were 9 years old, out and letting them shoot any gun, but especially an Uzi. I mean,
but you got to understand, why? There's a mentality here in Arizona, and I'm using it because I'm familiar with this. This has always been this. There's been a large amount of people in Kingman, you know, they tried to bomb a train, of these survivalists that feel that the government is, if it's not the government, it's somebody who's going to come knocking on the door and take everything away from you, your guns, your wife, your food. And so it's this, got this survivalist, everyone's preparing for the revolution or the war that's going to take place, and they're going to make sure that everyone, how maybe until they're 4 years old, can handle a gun so they can shoot the people who are going to come. Hopefully, I would be fearful in Arizona to go looking for food, because I would probably have my head blown off. That's the kind of mentality. This is mine. If you're coming over here, it's not yours. You don't come over here, I'll shoot you. That's
well,
that's,
you know, that has to be, you know, but the mentality you're talking about has to be everywhere, because these people are from New Jersey, you know?
Right.
And I understand about this gun range that they were, that's what they specialize in, tourists that go to Las Vegas and drive over an hour just so they can come and they can shoot automatic weapons and stuff, because you can't do that in New Jersey, at least not legally. But, you know, it just flabbergasted me trying to think of why you would want to expose your 9-year-old daughter to this. But our heart goes out, and I know this is true of you too, Kathleen, because you're a mom. Our heart goes out to this 9-year-old girl who's got to live with this all her life, and the family of the guy that was killed has even reached out to her and said that they feel her pain. And one of the daughters said that they were going to write a letter to the little girl. And, you know, but they all understand that she's going to have to live with this. And it's just a terrible thing. And, you know, they're calling it a tragic accident, but I'm not so sure that the parents should, you know, that somebody, I know they can't be held responsible, because in the state of Arizona, if you're 8 years old, you can use an automatic weapon, which just seems crazy to me. But the parents of this little girl, I think, are somewhat culpable for this.
Right, right. And you know what? It's just a sad thing, because, you know, that instructor's life was taken too, and who knows? Yeah. who knows what was going to, you know, what his goals or whatever were. And so that's an issue. And then, you know, let's come to another thing that is really very, very amazing is the housing prices. And we were just talking about, you know, rents in D.C. And yeah. You shocked me with what you were saying. This is another reason people have got to start getting involved in what gets built in their city and what kind of zoning there is and what kind of affordable housing you're going to have existing in some of these big cities that everyone yes. wants to live in.
Yes, because in D.C., we're ending up with rich people and poor people, and the city can't survive and thrive that way. You need a middle class. And I think that's happened in a lot of places in the United States. The thing that Kathleen's referring to is the fact that in DC now, they just did a study that shows that we have the highest, the second highest rents in America, $2.86 square foot. So if you're renting a 1,000-square-foot apartment in the District of Columbia, on average, is costing almost $3,000, $2,800 a month. In Honolulu, it's only $229, and in San Francisco, it's $254. But in Cleveland, it's only 68 cents a square foot. In Little Rock, it's only 73 cents a square foot. No wonder Bill Clinton had so much money. Atlanta is 79 cents a square foot. And where's the king of all of them, Kathleen?
New York City.
New York City is $4.91 a square foot. Now imagine a 1,000-square-foot apartment in New York City is costing you $5,000 a month on average. Oh, that's not an expensive place. That's just on average. And so to put this in perspective for you, if you rented a 200-square-foot apartment in New York City, a 203-square-foot apartment, which is like the size of my living room, you could rent a 1,470-square-foot, almost a 1,500-square-foot apartment, or one eight times the size, seven and a half times the size in Cleveland for the same price.
Yeah.
So we've got to do something. And in D.C., we're about to hit a crisis because there's 45 buildings that are multi-family buildings that account for over 4,000 units of affordable housing. And when they built these buildings, what happened was the federal government gave loans to the people that were building the buildings, low interest loans, which said that for 15 years, they had to provide affordable housing. And at the end of 15 years, they could raise rents to market rates. So what's going to happen with these 4,000 units in the next few years is that they're going to go from $400 and $500 and $600 a month rent up to $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000 a month rent, which means that the people that live there are going to have to move out. You can't hold the landlords responsible. They've lived up to their end of the bargain. They've gone 15 years providing well below market rates, so they have a right to, you know, they're in business. They have a right to up the rents, but the government needs to get involved and do something. They need to, in D.C., we need to either subsidize those people or we need to refinance at low interest if that's attractive to the landlords. We need to do something, and to get the government to do something, you got to show up at city council meetings and demand it. You have to show up at the mayoral debates and demand it. We have to demand this.
And I'll tell you this, too, that one of the things I noticed in New York when, you know, I was there, and that was coming to the point where really people couldn't, you know, it was always tough to get an apartment in New York. But now it was just impossible unless you had deep, deep pockets. It was a huge snowstorm. And, you know, always before, there was the little grocery store that was open and the coffee, you know, shop and, you know, the grocery store. And you know, you'd have maybe a museum or something open up. Well, guess what? None of that happened during the snowstorm because everyone who worked those kind of jobs in the city, which was service, you know, for the people in the city of Manhattan, they were no longer living in Manhattan. They were living out in the other Bronxes, and the metros were not coming into the city because it was such a huge snowstorm. The city was completely non-functional. You couldn't get anything to eat anywhere there. The restaurants were closed because all the waitresses didn't live in Manhattan. What you ended up having was a city that was no longer living, because a living city, a thriving city, you have to have all those people living in that area to make it a city. You know, you can't just have the rich living there and everyone commuting in. That's not what's going to work. And that's what's going to happen to D.C. And it scares me, the other point, because when I left D.C., it was nothing like this. But what it shows then is that D.C. is becoming a place of power. And so people are moving to D.C. more so than I think they ever have, because now that's where the government jobs are and it's a lot of money. That's where power is being bought in D.C. And it's being bought by the prices are quite high because now it's becoming so rich. I've never seen so many expensive. You were pointing them out to me, those $150,000 cars. I forget the names of them. I mean, it was amazing, the wealth in D.C. Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And the rich people in D.C. are getting richer, and the poor people are getting poorer, and the middle class is getting smaller. And that's really a dangerous thing for the city, is that we've got all these millennials. It's really short-sighted on our part, too. We have these millennials, these people in their 20s and 30s who are moving into the city because it's such a hub of activity in this region. You know, we've got great bars and restaurants and theater, and the government's here. But then they're moving out when they start making money. And they start making, and they start having kids that they could put into our school system, which is collapsing. They move out to Prince George's and Montgomery and Fairfax County because they can't afford to buy a house here. My wife and I, Patty and I, live in a house that we have a $750 a month mortgage payment on, and the house was just assessed at $990,000. For real estate taxes. We couldn't afford to live in this house. We couldn't afford to buy it today. And my kids, all three of my children, were raised in this city. My oldest is about to graduate from college in the spring. My son is in college. My daughter's still in high school. But when they get out, they're not going to be able to live in the town that they grew up in and that they love, because they're not going to be able to afford to live here. It's terrible.
It's a terrible state. And that's, you know, I just don't understand why. I'm wondering what it will take to get the American public to understand that they have to get involved. And whether it's your school board or your city council or your county, because it's become a problem, because our Congress can't work because they're so divided, and the people just sit here and, you know, what people are active complain, but they won't go to a meeting. And I just, I don't know what it's going to take to get people to understand that we're at a crisis point. You know, a lot of people have said that before, but we really are. And we better wake up pretty soon.
I'll tell you what it's going to take. It's going to take, you're going to have to do what I've always done. Listen to Kathleen and do exactly what she says.
Exactly. It would be so perfect.
I have a question for you, because, you know, Kathleen was railing a little earlier about the Democratic Party. Kathleen and I have been lifelong Democrats, but one of the things is that both of us started our political career working for Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter might not have been the best president, but he was a decent, honest man that cared about America, and that's how we were trained, and that's where we still are. So yes. Tell me, as somebody that's been through many, many, many Democratic conventions with me, where's the next Democratic convention going to be?
I don't know. It's between Phoenix, Brooklyn, and I can't remember the other city, but
Brooklyn was one, but I think we're going to rule Cleveland out because Columbus was one, but I think we're going to rule Columbus out because Cleveland is the city where the Republicans have decided to have their convention.
It'd be interesting to come to Arizona, because you're coming in one of the heart of one of the most conservative areas. You know, you got Amy Pollan, and you got all these guys make, you know, Karl Rove look, you know, they're about Karl Rove's kind of type. You know, they're very conservative, don't care about the state, don't care about anything, but it's a very conservative city, Phoenix, and It'd be interesting. It might shake things up a little bit. I'm not crazy about the Democratic Party here, but it would be interesting. I think immigration would become a real key issue, and this, you know, the whole issue of border security if the Democratic Convention was in Phoenix. I don't know if they want that kind of political show, which would happen. There would be a lot of protests. And they might be better off like in Brooklyn, because there it would be tamer. Actually, isn't that kind of funny? It would be tamer in Brooklyn. I just don't know if they want to be. They're going to be housed in the city, in New York City, in Manhattan, and I don't know how going over the bridges is going to impact, you know, the convention. But it'll be interesting to see what the choices are.
Especially if the governor of New Jersey closes down the bridges.
There you go.
That would be it, right? We'd all be stuck on the bridge. But I don't see Arizona for the same reason that I don't see D.C. They'll never come to D.C. I always think that D.C. would make a great backdrop for things, you know. We could do things at the Lincoln Memorial and, you know, at the Capitol and other stuff. But they'll never come to D.C. because D.C. is always going to vote Democratic. And I don't think they'll come to Arizona because they feel that Arizona is always going to vote Republican.
Right.
So go ahead. You get the last word, Kathleen.
I don't know. You know, I hate to stand on a soapbox, and sometimes I do on this show. But I would just hope that people would get a little bit – you know, maybe intrigued or frightened or whatever you want to might call it, to just go to one meeting that you feel you are involved in, whether it's your schools or your city council, and start getting involved and bring a friend, because it'll make a difference. Just about 30 people showing up at these meetings would really make these politicians start to think, oh my gosh, people are watching me, maybe I shouldn't do this. And that's all you need sometimes to make a difference.
Well, thanks for listening, America. We will see you next week. And as I said, do what Kathleen tells you and you'll never be sorry. Thanks.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.